the love are hanging on me, push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what.
Oh my goodness. Oh man. It's been a while since we've opened the program with that. Jeff Bennett here on this Tuesday. It's crazy. I had another marvelous 2 hours sleep last night. I got too much going on in the brain. I can't shut it down. I absolutely cannot shut it down. Wound up at 3 o'clock in the morning getting up and taking a shower. That still didn't calm me down. Unbelievable. Hey, how's everybody doing? World's going to hell. Survey's been taken. All consumers financially worse off following Joey's inflation and debt. It's insane. He's trying to tell us that it's all going down, but it's not. It's going up. We're all financially worse off now than we were a year ago. Growing personal debt following Biden's inflation. Morning Consult State of Consumer Banking and Payments report revealed earlier today. Report finds rising interest rates, soaring inflation, banking crisis has Americans feeling worse off financially than a year ago. Oh, amazing, amazing, huh? The financial well-being scores by annual household income dropped across all income levels so far this year. Hardest hit appears to be those earning larger incomes, though all consumers have felt the impacts of Joey's so-called energy policies and fiscal policies. Those making $50,000 have watched their income drop by 0.86%. Those, you know, it doesn't make any difference. It all sucks. It's all going down. Especially higher earners are worse off than they were a year ago. One of the key drivers in negative well-being was Biden's inflation fueled by a manufactured energy crisis. Come on, people. I really had no major use for Trump. I've never made any bones about that. But damn it, when he left office, gasoline was costing us, you know, in the upper $2.50-$2.60 per gallon range. We're sitting at $4.70 for regular gas out here in Arizona right now. This is a bunch of crap. So now by March, Federal Reserve continued to increase interest rates by 0.25%. Decision is subject to speculation by financial experts as the central bank weighed reducing soaring inflation and the stability of the banking system. And don't kid yourself, they're going to jack it up again. Report shows interest rates have most greatly impacted households earning over $100,000 a year. Higher earners are more likely to hold financial assets impacted by increased interest rates. Middle class has been hurt by inflation. There ain't going to be any middle class. We're all going to be lower class by the time it's over and done with. In 2022, Biden's 40-year high inflation cost American households an average of $5,200 extra, $433 a month. And yet the study shows that high-income earners were most impacted by Biden's inflation. Younger consumers were burdened with personal debt. Oh, but that's right. We're gonna pay it off because, let's see. That's right. They want to, you know, give kids with student debt a free pass. They don't want to pay it off. You know, my granddaughter graduated from ASU in December of this past year, Arizona State University. With no debt. Absolutely no debt. She worked. We certainly contributed, helped her get through, et cetera, et cetera. Why is it that we've got to pay the price to take care of everybody else's debt? The share of millennials who reported having credit card, auto, mortgage, educational, medical, personal, and buy now, pay later, home equity, and other types of debt was higher compared to any other generation across all debt types examined. A driver of personal debt for younger generations was student loans. 33% of millennials, 21% of Gen Zers revealed to the study they have debt from attending institutions that often employ far-left professors. 16% of Gen Xers, the oldest of the younger generation, still retain student debt. And Joey just wants to kind of wipe it up. It doesn't get wiped out. Somebody somewhere has to pay for it. Who the hell's zooming who, people? Wake up. My wife just came home with mail. And I saw something from our insurance company that I smelled it before I even opened it. We've been with this company for 26 years. And we paid all our car insurance, household insurance on three houses. Last year, we had a water leak that caused some pretty intense damage in my bedroom. We had to gut the laundry room and repipe everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. By the time it was done, they had a $19,000 bill. They've now decided that they are not going to renew our household insurance this year because given that cost and given the age of the house, et cetera, there's a strong likelihood that we're going to have other claims. How much money have they sucked out of us in 26 freaking years? A hell of a lot more than 19,000. This is pure horse crap. So it's just one more damn thing I've got to add to my load. I've got to start looking around and talking to other people, other insurance companies. And that means I'm going to have to move the car insurance too. Because without, you know, it's the house and the car that keeps everything down. And they're not bothering telling me that, but I know that's part of the fact. So I guess it's time to get up and move it all. And that's going to suck because I've got some real issues. Well, what else is going on? I don't know. Today is one of those days I could have very easily just said, let's go with a rerun. I'm going to sleep. Well, let's see. There's more interesting things that have happened. Average U.S. taxpayer, whatever average is, spent $1,087. That's 1087 on Pentagon contractors in 2022. That's according to an annual analysis by the National Priorities Project at the Institute of Policy Studies. What's the main message? That our government continues to invest too damn much money in the military and in militarized law enforcement and not nearly enough on prevention and people in our own communities. Come on, how much money is being spent with our involvement with the damn Ukraine to satisfy the frickin' Biden family with all their massive investments and control that they've got involved over there? We've not won a war since World War II. And yet we continue to stick our nose in everybody else's frickin' business. The average U.S. taxpayer in 2022 spent over four times as much on Pentagon contractors than on primary or secondary education. Now think about that. In 2022, out of every dollar, 27.1 cents on Medicare and health, 12.9 cents interest on the national debt. 8.4 cents of every dollar on unemployment and labor. 4.5% on food and agriculture. $0.03 on government. 1 cent on international affairs. 0.7 cents on science. 0.7 cents on energy and environment. 2.5% on 2.5 cents on housing and community. 3.5% on transportation. 5.4% on veterans benefits, which I find interesting because the veterans are still getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. 12.7 cents per dollar on education. And 17.8 cents on the Pentagon and military. This is our national priorities. This is the federal level. What about your state level? It's been found that on average, American taxpayers contributed $1,087 to Pentagon contractors alone, compared with a rotten $270 for kindergarten through 12 education. But then look what the hell's happened to the education system anyway. What's that song John Lennon sing? And in it, he referenced faggots and maggots. The top military contractor, Lockheed Martin, received $106 from the average taxpayer, while only $6 went to funding renewable energy. According to the analysis, the average 2022 U.S. taxpayer spent $74 for nuclear weapons, the $43 for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. We paid out $70 on deportations and border control versus $19 for refugee assistance. How much do you think we're going to fork out on border control in 2023? Joey's letting them all come in. We kicked in $20 for federal prisons, but just $11 for anti-homelessness programs. And we gave $298 to the top five military contractors and just $19 for mental health and substance abuse. What the hell's the main message here? That our government continues to invest far too much in the military and in militarized law enforcement, not nearly enough on prevention and people in our own communities. The annual analysis shows how individual income taxes, the portion withheld from workers' paychecks, how it was all spent in 2022. Does not include corporate or individual payroll taxes that fund Social Security or Medicare. To determine what constitutes the average tax bill, the NPP divided the total amount of federal income tax collected by the number of applicable returns filed. The analysis comes just over a month after the White House released Joe Biden's $1.6 trillion budget request for fiscal year 2024. And more than half of that amount, $886 billion, would go to the military. Responding to the $886 billion request, the NPP program director, Lindsay Koshgarian, said that last month that this military budget represents a shameful status quo that the country can no longer afford. Well, families are struggling to afford basics like housing and food and medicine, and our last pandemic era protections are ending. All while the Pentagon contractors pay their CEOs millions of dollars straight from the public treasury. The responsible budget would restore the Pentagon's spending to previous reduced levels from just a few short years ago. Reinvest that additional money at home where we, frankly, need it the most. Can you understand the insanity of all this? You know, I sit there looking at this tax thing. This not tax thing, but this thing we just get from the insurance company. It's the only time we've ever filed a claim on the house. I think we did one other one, but it was a relatively minor one. And here we sit. Absolutely insane. Yeah, here's a goodie. A group of wealthy Americans warns the U.S. democracy will not survive unless the rich are taxed heavily. I got a better idea. How about the government stops getting us involved with this stupid stuff? Why does the military continue to expand? Progressives applaud Biden's executive order to expand and improve the care economy. Expand and improve always means more moolah. That simple. That simple. I'm just scrolling through, seeing what else I can pick out here. More nonsense. Oh, this stupid business with Dianne Feinstein. Get her out. It's over. She's dead. One form or another. I don't know who's texting me, but I can't seem to turn that stupid phone volume down, so please stop texting me while I'm on the air. What else we got? Nothing much. ExxonMobil dismisses drilling in the Arctic refuge. Locals say Congress must act. I don't know about you folks, but I think I've had just about enough of Congress acting. Oh, here's another one. Largest U.S. corporate landlords reap huge profits amid double-digit rent hikes. These companies fueling the housing affordability crisis are among many corporations across industries that have shamelessly profiteered. 3 months after the administration unveiled a non-binding blueprint for renters' Bill of Rights, it was applauded by corporate landlords for doing little to rein in unfair rent increases and evictions. A new report by government watchdog Accountable.us showed on Monday that these same property owners reaped enormous profits in 2022 as they demanded more of their tenants' incomes in rent and excessive fees. You see, it doesn't stop. It's all about greed. It's all about screwing the people in every possible way they can. This group found that the six biggest property management companies in the U.S., Starwood Property Trust, Mid-America Apartment Communities, Invitation Homes, Avalon Bay Communities, Inc., AMH, and Tricon Residential, brought in $4.3 billion in net income last year. That's $1.3 billion more than they did in 2021. And the financial windfall came as the companies were raising rent prices and engaging in what Accountable.us called abusive tactics to evict people, in some cases after they had applied for rental assistance. Starwood Property Trust increased their rent by 30% or more at some of its thousands of properties last year. Saw its net income skyrocket by 115% to more than $1 billion. $591 million of which was spent on dividend payments to shareholders. And AMH and Tricon credited their pricing power and strong rent growth for helping them secure $310 million and nearly $780 million in net income last year. And the former company recorded a 47% increase, while the latter's income grew by 70%. MAA also reported that higher fee income and continued growth in average rent per unit were behind the ballooning of its net income, which grew by nearly 19% to more than $650 million. Tenants' right organizer Renee Christian Moya of the report's findings said this is egregious. Egregious? That's not even the word I would use. Four of the companies included in the Accountable.us report were members of the National Multifamily Housing Council, which celebrated the omission of national rent control measures in the renter protections that Biden proposed in January, while also claiming the proposals' recommended regulations would be too onerous on landlords, would discourage much-needed investments in housing supply. Part of the company's financial windfall was driven not by rent increases, but by fees the landlords have piled on top of rent. Late fees, extra charges for smart locks, pets using online systems to pay rent. Corporate landlords squeeze more revenues from portfolios by charging a range of ancillary fees, resulting in fee revenue vastly outpacing rent growth. Invitation Homes is one landlord that's been accused in the past of fee stacking by tenants who filed a class action lawsuit in 2018, all while providing tenants with homes where they face leaky pipes, vermin, toxic mold, non-functioning appliances, and month-long waits for repairs, according to the report. And the record profits, dividend spending, the poor service of the six companies, said Accountable.us, in addition to shelter costs rising by a striking 8.6% overall in the Consumer Price Index last month alone, demonstrates that aggressive interest rate hikes imposed by the Federal Reserve have done little to deter profiteering from corporate landlords. The group called on Congress to work with the Biden administration to stabilize runaway housing costs, for example, by passing legislation proposed by Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Grace Meng last month, which would invest $200 billion in affordable housing, or a bill introduced by Senator Elizabeth Warren and Representative Jamal Bowman to end rent gouging by corporate landlords. The nation's largest landlords have shown their burdensome rent hikes are based on greed, not need, after reporting billions of dollars in higher profits over the past year. These companies fueling the housing affordability crisis are among many corporations across industries that have shamelessly profiteered, undeterred by the Fed's repeated interest rate hikes. Well, higher interest rates have not curbed inflation sufficiently. They've done nothing to combat corporate greed. And instead of causing severe economic consequences for everyday Americans, from lower wages to lost jobs. And then here we sit in places like Portland and Seattle, L.A., Lord knows how many other cities around this country have got these drug-infested crap holes out on the street. And it's interesting. I don't have it handy. Somewhere, one of the cities is talking about, might have been L.A., I don't know, doing some things to raise a bunch of funds, take over old apartment complexes and renovate them, to make them available for all these needy people. It's time for the government to get the hell out of this kind of business. On Thursday, we'll have a couple of, and maybe even tomorrow. I'm not where I usually am, broadcasting-wise, programming-wise. I could have very easily walked away today. I've got so much on my head, so much on my mind, so much on my plate, so much on my table, on my desk. When did we in this country wake the hell up? Published two somewhat lengthy pieces at Federal Observer. New piece by Charles Dickens called Achtung. And a piece by Justin O. Smith, American Patriots Must Resolve to Restore Freedom and Liberty. All of this became interesting to me as I was working on Justin's piece early this morning, I think. There's a record album that I have. I've got the original vinyl, but I've also got it on CD. Recorded in 1968 or 69 by Gary McFarlane. It's kind of jazzy. And as I began to work on this, I began to give serious concern about changing the name of my program. This program you're listening to. Over the years, it's been known as Perspectives on America, the edge of darkness, life, liberty, and all that jazz. The title of Gary McFarlane's album was America the Beautiful, an account of its disappearance. And on that cover is an eagle. With tears coming out of its eyes. That says so much. An account of its disappearance. Well, let's move on down the line. I've been busy on the phone, busy working my assets off to try to come up with products. Gold, silver, predominantly. There is a huge shortage of products. There is massive demand for the products. I know one of the things I was going to publish that I didn't get around to is this massive involvement. J.P. Morgan, Chase, all things being equal in this country, is the largest buyer and holder of gold in the bank in this country. And why has all this become important? Because we face the rise of the petro-yuan, the end of the petrodollar's reign, the impact on global markets. Did you know that central banks bought more gold last year than any year in the past 55 years? more than any year since 1967. I mean, few people realize it, but 1967 was a significant year in financial history, mainly due to the events at the London Gold Pool. The London Gold Pool was an agreement among central banks of the United States and Western European countries to stabilize the price of gold. And the goal was to maintain the price of gold at $35 per ounce by collectively buying or selling gold as needed. But in 1967, the London Gold Pool collapsed due to a shortage of gold and increased demand for the metal. And that was because European central banks bought massive amounts of gold as they began to doubt that the U.S. government's promise to back the dollar to gold at $35 an ounce. And hence the buying depleted the London Gold Pool's reserves, pushed the price of gold higher. In short, my friends, 1967 was the beginning of the end of the Bretton Woods international monetary system that had been in place since the end of World War II. It ultimately led to severing the U.S. dollar's last link to gold in 1971. The dollar has been unbacked fiat confetti ever since. Though the petrodollar system and coercion have propped it up. 1971. Oh, that's right. They blame Nixon for all that. I've shared that story with you. You see, the point is large global gold flows can be a sign that a paradigm shift in the international monetary system is, my friends, imminent. Central banks are the biggest players in the gold market. And now that we have just experienced the largest year for central bank gold purchases since 1967, it must be clear to us that something big is coming. And those are just the official numbers that governments report. The actual gold purchases could be so much higher, because governments are often opaque about their gold holdings, which they consider to be a crucial part of their economic security. And thus today, I believe that we're on the cusp of a radical change in the international monetary system with horrendously profound implications. And yet it's shocking to me how few are aware of what's happening and its enormous significance. I suspect most people are going to be taken by surprise. Won't be a pleasant one. But they will be the ones holding the bag for a failing monetary system.
Yeah, but you know it doesn't have to be a disaster for everyone.
Those who get positioned properly ahead of a paradigm shift could make fortunes. Make fortunes. It always comes down to lining your pocket and making money. How about just the ability to survive? According to a recent Financial Times story, the big buyers of gold in 2022 were China and the Middle East oil producers. That's not a coincidence. Because those countries will be at the center of the changes to the international monetary system. It's no secret that the chinky dinks have been stashing away as much gold as possible for many years. They're the world's largest producer and buyer of gold. And most of that gold finds its way into the Chinese government's own treasury. But nobody knows the exact amount of gold that China has. But most observers believe it is many multiples of what the government declares. Today it's clear why China has had an insatiable demand for gold. because Beijing has been waiting for the right moment to pull the rug from beneath the U.S. dollar, and now is that moment. But the key to understanding it all is Chinese President Xi or Xi's recent historic visit to Saudi Arabia and other Gulf Cooperation Council states to launch, in his words, a new paradigm of all-dimensional energy cooperation. That's Gulf Cooperation Council, GCC. That includes Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates. Those countries account for more than 25% of the world's oil exports, with Saudi Arabia alone contributing about 17%. And in addition, more than 25% of China's oil imports come from Saudi Arabia. China is the GCC's largest trading partner. And the meetings reflect the natural and growing trade relationship between China, the world's largest oil importer, and the GCC, the world's largest oil exporters. And during Xi's visit, he made the following crucial remarks: that China will continue to import large quantities of crude oil from GCC countries, expand imports of liquefied natural gas, strengthen cooperation in upstream oil and gas development, engineering services, storage, transportation, and refining, and make full use of the Shanghai Petroleum and National Gas Exchange as a platform to carry out yuan settlement of oil and gas trade. Yuan is Y-U-A-N. It's not the Mexican spelling. And so after years of preparation, the Shanghai International Energy Exchange, or INE, launched a crude oil futures contract denominated in Chinese yuan in March of 2018, the first oil futures contract to be traded in China. Contract is based on Brent crude oil, the global benchmark for oil prices, and it's settled in cash. And since then, any oil producer can sell its oil for something besides U.S. dollars. In this case, the Chinese yuan. And the INE yuan oil futures contract provides a new pricing benchmark for the global oil market, which the U.S. dollar has traditionally dominated. And by trading in yuan, the contract is expected to increase the use of the Chinese currency in global trade and reduce the reliance on the dollar. Its significance lies in its potential to shift the balance of power in the oil market away from the U.S. and towards China, and to increase the use of the Chinese yuan in global trade. So let's see. We're going to cut back on vehicles, cars, and trucks that run on gasoline so that we can expand our electric vehicles and go to China for all the parts to keep them going. We lose either way. What in the living hell is wrong with these people? There's one big issue through all of this. Most oil producers don't want to accumulate a large yuan reserve, and China knows it. And that's why China has explicitly linked the crude futures contract with the ability to convert yuan into physical gold without touching China's official reserves. And though gold exchanges in Shanghai, the world's largest physical gold market, and Hong Kong, you're dealing with PetroChina and Sinopec, two Chinese oil companies. They provide liquidity to the yuan crude futures by being big buyers. So if any oil producer wants to sell their oil in yuan or gold indirectly, there will always be a bid. And after years of growth and working out the kinks, the INE yuan oil future contract is now ready for prime time. Xi would promise the GCC large and consistent oil purchases if it wasn't ready. But why is China purchasing oil and gas in the GCC in yuan important? My friends, because it undercuts the petrodollar system, which has been the bedrock of the U.S. and international financial system since the Bretton Woods system broke down in 1971.
Think about all of this. It is horrific. Absolutely horrific. Now, I got a quickie.
What I'm going to offer you right now on the air is a one-time offer. Very limited supply. Exceedingly limited supply. Just bear with me a second. I got to open up another. Come on. This is what I want. Thank you very much. I'm going to take a real fast peek at something here. Spot gold still holding above $2,000 an ounce, currently at about $2,010. I have an offer I'm going to make to you right now. It's first come, first serve. I only have 4 units available, period. It's not to say we won't have more in the future, but these are available now. They will be shipping from my office. These are Valcombi 1x1/10 ounce gold combi bar. This is the 1 ounce gold piece that breaks into 10 1/10 ounce pieces. Okay? You're going to be looking at 2,200 and $10 per and a flat $15 shipping. 2,210. First come, first serve. That's simple. You send me an email. KettleMoraineLTD@cox.net. I'm not going to take time to spell it all out right now. You can go to the website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Down in the lower right-hand column of the page is the email. You can click right on it. Send me an email. Let me know that you want one. If the first email comes in, says they want 4, they're yours. That's it. When they're gone at that price. I don't know what kind of replacement we're going to get. Doesn't matter if spot's moving a lot. There's such a demand for these things that it's scooting up. Okay? It's first come, first serve. It's that simple. Yeah, if you happen to send me a text, same difference. For those of you who have my text, you know where to find it. Thanks, Charlie. Glad you got it. I mean, Charlie and I have been going back and forth with trying to get an email out to him, which has been a real pain. And, yeah, I don't have the answer to that one, Steve. Yeah, these particular pieces, no, I'm not going to give the reason they came up, but they became available. So take advantage. You want one, you want 2. First one comes in and says they want all 4 of them. You can have all 4 of them. Tough to come by. My understanding is we won't be able to deliver these until probably sometime again in late May. Oh, these I'll be receiving in a couple of days. I'll be able to ship them right away. Back to our story. For nearly 50 years, the Saudis had always insisted that anyone wanting their oil would need to pay with U.S. dollars, upholding their end of the petrodollar system. But recently, all that's changed. After Zayev's historic visit and bombshell announcement, the Saudi government ain't hiding its intention to sell oil in Yuan. According to a recent Bloomberg report, Saudi Arabia is open to discussions about trade in currencies other than the U.S. dollar, according to the kingdom's finance minister. In short, my friends, the Saudis don't think the U.S. is holding up its end of the petrodollar deal, so they don't feel like they should hold up their part. You see, the Saudis are angry at the U.S. for not supporting it enough in its war against Yemen. They were further dismayed by the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, the nuclear negotiations with Iran. And in this contact, China swooped in and after many years finally compelled the Saudis to accept yuan as payment. Come on, it was bound to happen. China is already the world's largest oil importer. Moreover, the amount of oil it imports continues to grow as it fuels an economy of over 1.4 billion people, which is more than four times larger than what we've got. And the sheer size of the Chinese market made it impossible for Saudi Arabia and other oil exporters to ignore China's demands to pay in yuan indefinitely. The Shanghai International Energy Exchange further sweetens the deal for oil exporters. And so here's the bottom line. Saudi Arabia, the linchpin of the petrodollar system, is openly agreeing not to sell its oil exclusively in U.S. dollars. And it signals an imminent and enormous change for anyone holding U.S. dollars. And hence, it would be incredibly foolish to ignore this giant red warning sign. Even the Wall Street Journal admits such a move would be disastrous for the U.S. dollar. Wall Street Journal states that the Saudi move could chip away at the supremacy of the dollar in the international financial system, which Washington has relied on for decades to print treasury bills it uses to finance its budget deficit. Now, there's Ron Paul, retired American politician, physician who's been a vocal critic of the current international monetary system for decades. Nixon's move to end the dollar's link to gold in 1971 initially motivated Ron Paul to get into politics. And he's known for his views on monetary policy, central banking, Federal Reserve, written several books on the topics, advocated for a return to sound money and gold-backed monetary system. And in short, people like Paul know more about the international monetary system than almost anyone alive. And he once gave a speech called The End of Dollar Hegemony, where he pointed out the one thing that he would precipitate the U.S. dollar's collapse. And here was the relevant part. He said the economic law that honest exchange demands only things of real value as currency cannot be replaced or repealed. The chaos that will one day ensue from our experiment with worldwide fiat money will require a return to money of real value. And we know that day is approaching when oil-producing countries demand gold or its equivalent for their oil rather than dollars or euros. The sooner the better. And so here comes the bottom line. The end of the petrodollar system, my friends, is imminent. For over a half a century, this arrangement, has allowed the U.S. government and many Americans to live way beyond their means. And the U.S. takes this unique position for granted. But I fear it will soon disappear. There's going to be a lot of extra dollars floating around suddenly looking for a home now that they're not needed to purchase oil. As a result, a lot of oil money, hundreds of billions of dollars and perhaps trillions that would typically flow through banks in New York and U.S. dollars and into treasuries will instead flow through Shanghai into yuan and gold. Understand, my friends, the end of the petrodollar system is bad news for Americans. But unfortunately, there's little any individual can practically do to change the course of these trends in motion. Does any of this awaken you? Or Or does it just tend to make you yawn and go to sleep because of the fact that there isn't a damn thing you can do about it? We have voted ourselves deeper and deeper into the insanity of all this crap. We've continued to put more and more people like Trump in office, more people like Biden, Obama. We continue to fall for the bull crap. The Chucky Scummers, the Pelosi's, the Feinsteins, the Cheney's. We bought it. No. We bought into it by selling out to it. Does that make sense? It should. Gold has just moved up some more. Gold has just moved up some more. It's unreal. We do have access to some silver. We do have some access to 1 ounce gold coins. I do have access to some fractional international gold pieces. There may still be some sovereigns left. I was notified the other day we may actually have access to some Swiss 20 franc pieces. Convert what you can. 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. Convert what you can. Take advantage of that which will help you all. Thanks for being with us tonight. Been an interesting hour. Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow. And as for you, Julie dear, I'll have a title for you in a few minutes. Take care. Good night.
These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have too much, but we're taking our chances. Say, I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak of. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do-do-do. Do you think we have time? Do you? Hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances. Say I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to a wall, there is no hope to speak out. Skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What?
Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.